With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson. We're back in the studios of the NovaCare Complex. We are returned from Indianapolis, and with me, as always, is Fran Duffy, and we have Beowulf.
Now the third wheel is back.
Not the third wheel, please.
Back and better than ever.
Exactly. But I was the third wheel for the start of the process.
That's
you guys
true.
Had your all-star game fun for a couple weeks, and then I had to jump on board. So
you guys did a wonderful job.
Thank you.
You were missed. There were definitely the biggest challenge, as we'll preview the show in a second here, is when we come up with the games portion, the on-the-clock segment. And I'm like, that's Bo's wheelhouse. It's almost like I wanted to call Bo to be like, well, Bo, what should we do?
And I'm glad there's something I bring to the table.
So our special guest this week is Peter Schrager from Fox Sports. We're going to talk about his mock draft as well as the winners and losers in his perspective from the NFL Scouting Combine. Our pick six, we're going to pick six players who may take notice at the NFL Scouting Combine. We're going to hear from Auburn wide receiver Sammy Coates and Penn State tackle Donovan Smith, but we're going to kick things off with the latest headlines in our Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
Oh, Peter King. Stirring the pot. He's typically not a person who does a mock draft until very late in the process. I think, actually, the magazine before the draft is usually when he unveils his one and only mock draft. So for him to say, I'm going to do a top 15, he does a fine 15 every week in his Monday Morning Quarterback column. He wants to do top 15, and of course he throws in one trade, and of course it involves the Philadelphia Eagles, where he has the Eagles moving up from 20 to number 5, trading with Washington to get none other than quarterback Marcus Mariota.
It's good page views.
Great page views.
Yeah.
Great so, talk.
I don't know. What else is the point of doing a mock draft at this point?
So it made me wonder, does he know something that, you know, is sort of like a kid who has a dollar and, you know, he doesn't want to save it. He has to spend it on the first thing he sees, that he had some bit of information that he just had to get out there.
That doesn't seem like the kind of thing that he would do.
I would agree with that. But and then on top of it, to further the Mariota discussion, Jimmy Kempski, our friend from PhillyVoice.com, a guest throughout the season on our Cover 2 segment.
Formerly of the Eagles Insider podcast.
Yes. Thinks that the Eagles are all in on getting to number 1. Not number 2, which is a lot of people are speculating that that's where the Eagles would have to get to. He thinks they're all in to get to Tampa's spot at number 1.
Sounds so good to me.
I don't know what he's thinking with it, but I mean that's pretty crazy. I don't know what it would take to make that move, but
I'll take it. I mean, I don't know what it's going to be, but if you just offer, you know, if they want to move down to 20 for a second round pick, I'll do it.
Well, that's the thing.
It's what would it take? Now, I know there was I think SB Nation did a mock draft that had the Eagles moving up, but it didn't have any kind of parameters of a draft or what picks were, you know, surrendered in the process. Peter King had 2 first round picks and 2 other picks.
A second this year and a fourth next year, which I would do.
Which
for sure.
Really isn't that much if you think you're getting your franchise quarterback.
Right.
So in that instance, I think it would be well worth it. But it's just fascinating that it's like this is going to be the ongoing story unless the Buccaneers come out and say, we're taking Mariota with number 1. But it seems like that they're focused on Jameis Winston at this point.
That's the prevailing theory. I think that's pretty much the consensus, you know, across the media sphere is Jameis number 1 to Tampa Bay. But I think we've got, 60-plus days until the
63, draft? Yeah, I think, so around there.
Thank you, Alex Smith.
For 63 days, this is going to be the talk.
Yes, indeed. Make sure you check out the Countdown to the Draft feature.
There you go.
Every day on philadelphia.com. Love there for Alex Smith and Ab Herman. Their number 2 item here on Draft Buzz, Daniel Jeremiah. Always preface it with former Eagle scout, so obviously has some ties and connections to the organization. He updated his mock draft following the combine, and he has the Eagles taking as Byron Jones, the cornerback from UConn, who literally leaped out of Lucas Oil Stadium.
Literally? He jumped out of the stadium?
He jumped out of the stadium.
Wow.
It was amazing.
It was that really, would be, that it was would be cold, impressive. I thought, right?
It was it that was, impressive. Was
jeez. He's a superhero?
He pretty much was.
Wow.
Breaking the combine record.
And setting a world record.
Yeah, that's got to be a world
it
record,
It was a world
right?
record.
It was a world record?
It was though the no one has ever jumped that far on record.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine anyone else has ever jumped out of a stadium before.
As the number 20 overall pick, it is, should be noted that he did have Byron Jones in his top 50 on his big board before the combine. So it's not like this is some coming completely out of nowhere, but still, it seems like one of those combine performances that's drastically pushing someone up the board.
I don't know that I would say that it was just the combine performance. I mean, going into the week, if you had asked me who were the top five players that I haven't watched yet, and when I say top five, obviously I don't know because I haven't watched them yet. But in terms of what I hear about guys, you know what, you know who people are talking about. Byron Jones was a guy that couldn't go to the Senior Bowl. He had the Senior Bowl invite, and I know you know there were people that were disappointed that he couldn't play because they were excited about what he can bring to the table. You said Jeremiah had him in his top 50. He goes, he tears up the combine in terms of the jumps and the agility scores. So I got back and we watched him, and he is very, very good.
Yeah?
He's a very good player.
Is he more Bleedy Ray Wilson or more Dwayne Gratz?
He's better than Bleedy Ray Wilson, for sure. He's a big kid. He's physical. He's got explosive traits in terms of his ability to come downhill and play the run, his ability to catch up to receivers shows the makeup speed. Shows good instincts. I mean, the guy's got a lot of traits that you would like. All intents and purposes, a high character kid. I think I heard Todd McShay say that the kids on campus call him Senator Jones because of how he carries himself and you know just the way he is off the field. So very,
that's
very
a great
impressive
nickname.
Guy. Senator Jones.
I love
like
that nickname. That is really good.
I'm going to call Brian that for now. Senator Thomas.
It should be noted that Marcus Peters, whom a lot of people have linked to the Eagles in mock drafts, including Peter Schrager, who we'll have on in just a little bit, was still on the board at that point. Our number three item, Greg Cosell, a good friend, doing the film room series, the free agency film room series. We'll be doing the NFL draft film room series with Bo Wolf in a couple weeks here.
Love that guy.
Told the Midday 180 in Nashville that Randy Gregory is a better prospect than last year's number one overall pick, Jadeveon Clowney.
I knew that Greg liked him a lot. He was one
you
of the
You didn't know
first
about that much, though.
Well, but I, no. knew, I also remember that Greg didn't love Clowney.
He didn't love Clowney, and he, you know, he never said, "Oh, I love him more than Clowney." But I know that, you know, obviously Greg had his issues with Clowney, his, you know, in his overall athleticism. Obviously, the explosive movement, the power that Clowney had, that's not Gregory's game. But his ability to bend and turn the corner, play in space, that's more Gregory's game. I know that he was a big fan.
So I recall how Clowney was discussed as, you know, someone whom teams could be willing, and this was after his breakout season the year before last, that would be potentially a type of guy who, you know, you might be able to trade up for and get like a franchise quarterback type bounty in return. Obviously had a disappointing final season at South Carolina, so but he still went number one overall. He had the knee issues and was not able to play for much of the season, so the jury still remains out on him. But I think the big question with Gregory going to the combine was his size. And you know, athletically, he timed well. Size seems to be okay.
He was in the bottom five in terms of the edge rushers. But, you know, I think it was more, you know, Tony Pauline reported that I believe it was 219 pounds he showed up. And I think he was 235 when he showed up at the combine. So, you know, he put on a little bit of weight.
And I think in like a 2-month process, since the end of the college season, sure. when he began training right. for the combine, he was 219. So the edge rusher class this year is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting to see, is that going to be a situation where if, you know, the first guy goes off to Tennessee at number two. Say Leonard Williams doesn't go to number two, and it's Dante Fowler or Gregory. Will that spark free-for-all to try to get those guys? Because I think everyone's looking at, like, Atlanta at number eight as a team, you know, that really wants an edge rusher. And are you going to want to have the fourth or fifth guy at that point?
But there, I mean, there are. There's four, five, six guys who are worth having in the first, maybe half of the first round. And, you know, we talked about Vic Beasley was under the radar coming into the combine. He had a great combine.
Yeah. Yes.
Same with Bud Dupree. So those guys are, I mean, there's a lot of hooch there.
And the big thing with Beasley was, I mean, a year ago the guy was 220 pounds. He shows up at 245 and still, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you look at some of these guys who was the kid who ran the 4.240 from UAB?
J.J. Nelson.
Mm-hmm. He was 156 pounds. You know, so like, okay, like you have to take
that
with
a grain
like
of
salt.
He looks like a kicker.
Right. I mean, you have to take that with a grain of salt, whereas if Beasley showed up at 220 and had that workout, you'd say like, okay, yeah, but he's 220 pounds. He shows up at 245 and has that kind of workout. That's really, really impressive.
Impressive. Yes, indeed.
Have you watched J.J. Nelson?
No.
Are you going to?
I'm sure I probably will at some point.
I'm starting to see mock drafts, speaking of Beasley, where he's going in the top 10 now. And I've even seen some where Dupree is going in the top 10. So it's going to be, I'm really going to be fascinated to see on draft day, are these guys all going to go that high? And it's a premium position where guys could go that high, that you'd be willing. It's not, you know, I don't want to say any position is substandard, but where you question taking guys that high, it seems like it's a year where if you need an edge rusher, this is a good year to go get one.
The interesting thing with Dupree is a lot of people question his production. And, you know, it was the same question with, you know, obviously to this point it hasn't worked out for the Dolphins, but it was the same question with Deion Jordan. The thing is that he was used in a similar way in that he was playing in space. He played in coverage a lot for Kentucky. So he wasn't rushing the passer down after down after down. So you look at a guy like Danielle Hunter from LSU who was rushing the passer 99 times out of 100 and compare his production to Dupree's. I mean, it's apples to oranges.
All right, so the next item here, Lance Zierlein. He joined us on the Journey to Draft podcast while we were out in Indianapolis. He has a real great column that he does now for NFL.com where he cites anonymous personnel executives and scouts, and one of them told him that cornerback Trey Waynes, the corner from Michigan State, had the best combine of any player who participated in the combine last week in Indianapolis, and that he is the best corner in this draft class, and it's quote-unquote not even close. You know, this is a player who was mocked to the Eagles in number of mock drafts, being their number 20. You know, after the 40 time, which showed the speed on the field, after the way he performed position drills, it seems like there's no chance that he would be their number 20.
Yeah, I think that the two guys who, like, immediately after they ran their 40 were like, okay, say goodbye to him for the Eagles, were Trey Waynes and Kevin White. You were like, okay, well, there goes that dream.
Yeah.
Trey Waynes was super impressive. And, you know, we've been talking about him being the top corner since our Journey to the Draft podcast started. But, say goodbye to him.
Yeah, I think he put that to bed. And there were people that kind of thought that maybe he'll run in the 4.5s, you know, low 4.4, high 4.4s. I had heard that he was going to run in the 4.3s, and that was really
Now, his
really
shuttles
impressive.
Weren't so great.
Weren't great, but they were still decent. I have to look at what the exact numbers were. But, the 40 time is just – and the 10-yard split was also very, very good.
Yeah.
All right, and the last item here, Josh Norris of RotoWorld, he did a combine review, and he named Utah defensive back Eric Rowe as the player most worthy of additional buzz moving forward. He listed 7 players in all, including Byron Jones. I don't know a lot about Rowe at this point, but do you gentlemen agree with the sentiment?
Yeah, we got to see him up close to the Senior Bowl, and we both watched him together on film. But the disappointing thing at the Senior Bowl was that he was working mostly at safety, not at corner. And even, you know, on the NFL.com site, he's listed as a safety, not as a corner. But, I mean, he ran a 4.44, 4.45.
Yep.
I mean, he's clearly got the speed to play a corner. He only played corner his senior year at Utah. But I think, I mean, if you're a team drafting, he's got the length. He's 6'1", maybe close to 6'2". I mean, I don't see why you wouldn't put him at corner.
I'd have to look. But if I remember correctly, I didn't put this down. I didn't write this down in my notes, but I believe he finished in the top 5 in the 3 cone and the short shuttle as well for corners, not just for DBs, but for the cornerback position. So, you know, that was very, very impressive to me because I kind of saw that the speed was there, but to see that lateral agility, that, you know, that change of direction to be there as well, I thought that was pretty impressive. I think he's a corner, and I think before leading up to the combine, I thought he was a top 5 corner. So, I mean, I'm pretty high on
him. I think he's a top 40 pick.
I think so. I would agree.
All right, we're going to transition now to our Mr. Relevant, Peter Schrager from Fox Sports, to discuss the winners and losers of the NFL Scouting Combine.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
For our Mr. Relevant this week, we bring in Peter Schrager from Fox Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at PSchrags. And Peter, we want to get into the winners and losers of the NFL Scouting Combine. From your perspective, who was a player who you think did the most to help his draft stock during the combine in Indianapolis?
Hey, guys. A guy that everyone was talking about afterwards was Dante Fowler Jr. out of Florida. What happened to this draft is that you've got all these different outside pass rushers. There's a glut of them, and they're all pretty talented, whether it be Vic Beasley, Shane Ray, Randy Gregory. There's a long list of them. But Fowler stood out, and talking to different executives afterwards, he said he weighed in at what they wanted to, and he ran what he wanted to, but he was awesome in the interviews. He played for some pretty bad Florida teams under Will Muschamp, but he was always the guy who was standing out on tape, positive, good energy, a leader, and he played every position. He played defensive tackle, defensive end, played outside linebacker in college, and really wowed at the combine. He wore a gold watch during his 40, which I think everyone appreciates. That's pretty good. And really stood out from the different pass rushers. So I think he went from being like a top 15 pick to a top 5 pick.
And he certainly was one of the best interviews of the week as well, for those of you in the media that were able to talk to him during his media availability.
Yeah, he was great. And, you know, he said, you're from Florida. Are you a fan of the Buccaneers? He's like, I guess I'm a fan of the Buccaneers, but, you know, they're the Buccaneers. And like, he had lines. He had great lines.
It was perfect.
Just very positive. And there's a thing where, you know, someone is doing shtick up there, and you're like, all right, enough, buddy. Like, let's move on. No, it seemed genuine. He's just a good personality, good character. And that shouldn't be the reason he gets drafted above other guys. But if you're a great guy in the locker room and you can bring everybody together, that does go a long way. And from everyone I've spoken to who's affiliated with that Florida program, this was the one bright spot in what was some bad years under Muschamp.
I remember when he said he was going to come out in the draft, he said, I came in with the champ, and I'm leaving with the champ.
That was a tweet.
So if you go from Dante Fowler being perhaps the biggest winner, if we go to the other side, who do you think was the guy coming out of the combine with maybe his draft stock falling the most?
Shame, but I'm going to say quarterback Brett Hundley out of UCLA. And it's not because Hundley threw poorly or didn't perform well or didn't run well. It's just that we never see the top quarterbacks throw. It's been since 2011 in which the last top quarterback threw at the combine, and that was Cam Newton. But in this combine, we had both Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston. They were both lights out. I thought they both threw very well. And all the other quarterbacks kind of paled in comparison. So Brett Hundley, who everyone expected coming into the combine, would have a chance if those two guys didn't throw to really perform and stand out. He kind of was in the background, and he didn't do anything to wow anyone. So Hundley went from, you know, hey, there's a chance this guy steals the combine as someone everyone talks about at the quarterback position to an afterthought. And that wasn't so much on him, but it was more just because Winston and Mariota were so head and shoulders above the rest of the quarterbacks.
Do you think, Peter, that he's the number three quarterback at this point, or do you think Bryce Petty might have put himself ahead in the conversation, and maybe even down the line Garrett Grayson, who was not able to work out the combine, might work himself into that spot?
I'm going to go with a guy you haven't even met. I think Sean Mannion out of Oregon State's the third quarterback taken. I really do. Mannion played under Mike Riley at Oregon State, NFL offense. Same kind of reason that we're saying Jameis over Mariota and the fact that he's familiar with an NFL offense and get it done. Mannion, to me, is like Derek Anderson, the kind of guy with a big arm, big, tall guy. He's not a first-round pick. He's probably a second-round pick, and he's going to be reliable. He's the all-time leading passer in Pac-12 history. He's done the job, and he's a big body. I mean, you can stick him in the pocket. Going to be all right. I don't think he's a project. I think you know what you're getting with Sean Mannion. He's going to come in pretty polished, and he's not going to be a number one guy. He might not be a franchise guy right away, but think Kellen Clemens, think Derek Anderson, and there's a place for a guy like that in a roster. I'm not sure if Bryce Petty or Brett Hundley are going to be those guys in the future.
That race for third quarterback is going to be very interesting, but how about the race for top quarterback? You know, you mentioned maybe Winston is a little bit more pro-ready than Mariota. For you, is Winston number one right now?
Winston's one for me. And, you know, I was around these guys a bit all week, and this is going to come off as callous or whatever, and it might not matter, but it just felt like in the quarterback group, it felt like Jameis Winston was the counselor, and the rest of the guys were like the campers, and we were at summer camp. I mean, they all were kind of following around Winston. He was the leader of that group, gets out there, throws well. Everyone else throws okay, you know, but it's Winston saying, okay, let's go. And then talking to guys around the league, when they met with him, he was awesome. He was awesome in the room. Like, he was charismatic. He could get on the board. He could diagram plays. And it's not an exaggeration when you heard the word savant be thrown out. People are talking about this guy like, you know, he has it all upstairs where he could break down an offense and say, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to attack the defense and get it done. And There are some question marks, obviously, off the field. Forget the off-the-field stuff. That's the biggest stuff. If they see more, if Tampa goes out there and looks and finds stuff, then he won't be the first pick. But the question marks on the field, he threw all those interceptions, and you know, he's aggressive. He goes for it. So they're going to have to decide whether that aggression, you know, 18 interceptions in college football last year to throw the second most interceptions, that is strange. And the fact that the one game that he lost against Oregon, he kind of had a hissy fit in the sidelines, that worries me a little bit also. But speaking around the league, the guy's got charisma, he's got the size, he's got the build, and the fact that he competed, I mean, there's no reason he should throw. And this is something that's kind of inside baseball, but I talked to one team and they said, look, if he was from a big shop like a CAA or Drew Rosenhaus or David Dunn, one of these big agents, he wouldn't have thrown like that. They just sort of said, like, no, but his agent is a baseball agent. Jameis kind of runs the show in this one. He says, hey, Marcus is throwing, I'm going to throw. Forget that. I'm going for it. And I think teams liked it. It was like, you know, let's just go for it. He knows he's not going to run a 4.5 40. Yet he gets up there, runs a 4.9. And he puts himself subject to criticism, but he knew he was running a 4.9. That's what he runs. Like, he's like, let's go do it. So I think teams really like Jameis Winston. I really like Jameis Winston. If he was sitting next to me in a cubicle, I might not be as positive on him. I mean, the fact that he came off kind of so confident and borderline cocky, it could rub you the wrong way. But for an NFL quarterback to have that in the locker room and guys can gravitate around it, that's pretty cool.
Peter, last question I will let you get going here. Going through your mock draft, there's two names that popped out toward the end, of that first round there. One is Quentin Rollins, the defensive back from Miami of Ohio, and Shaq Thompson, the player whom everyone's trying to figure out a position for in the NFL, even though linebacker seems to be where he's destined to be playing. Just talk about those last two picks there and why you think those guys might still be in the first round after how they performed at the combine.
Quentin Rollins is a great story. It's one of the stories I love doing what I do because you find these stories and you're like, all right, this is awesome. So he played 4 years at Miami, Ohio as point guard, all-time leader in steals, never stepped foot on the football field, hadn't played football, but he graduates, has a year of eligibility left, and says, I'm going to try college football. So he goes to the coach. They figure it out. They say, all right, look, you can walk on the team, play, whatever. So he comes and plays college football, goes out and is their number one corner, has seven interceptions, and wins MAC Defensive Player of the Year, the first time he's played football in college. Still learning the position, but a physical presence, 6'1", 185, big hawking corner. All those interceptions, I watched the whole tape of every one of them back, they were all just instinct. I mean, there's not really much technique there. He still watches with his eyes, not with the guy's hips. So such a raw product, but so physical and so good and just an athlete who's smart. I mean, he's a point guard. This guy can run a defense and is figuring it all out. And speaking with people around the league, they're saying this guy picked up more in 1 year than most corners pick up in 4 years at college football. So what's he going to do in the pros? I can only imagine. So he's a very exciting prospect. I have him slipping to 27, I believe, or 26 to the Ravens, but I wouldn't be shocked if he goes earlier. Shaq Thompson out of Washington, no idea what he's going to play in pro football. I've heard running back, I've heard safety, but he says he is a linebacker. And if he's a linebacker and he's an outside linebacker with his size, he is probably the fourth or fifth outside linebacker taken. He's a mid-20s pick. If he says safety and he wants to learn safety, he's the top safety off the board. If he says running back, special teams, put me wherever, then he's a Swiss Army knife, and you can draft him in the mid-20s and use him however. I don't think there's a pro comparison to Shaq Thompson because of his size, his build, his athletic ability, and what he did at college. So he is a wild card. I don't know where to place him. I have him going to Cincinnati at 21 just because they need defense in their front seven, in their linebacker core. I said that would be a good fit for him. But I wouldn't be shocked if he goes to a Washington or a Baltimore where they need defensive back help, and he's their starting safety next year.
I feel like everyone's getting caught up in the nomenclature of the position, and even Shaq himself, where you could say maybe he's a linebacker, quote-unquote, for those first two downs, and then he's a dime linebacker, a safety hybrid-type player for those sub-package roles. So there's a lot of ways to use him. It'll be very interesting to see what kind of defensive scheme, what kind of defensive coaching staff gets their hands out on. Peter Schrager from Fox Sports, thank you very much for being our Mr. Relevant this week, breaking down the winners and losers of the NFL Scouting Combine.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And Eagles fans, don't worry. Everyone's upset always when you miss the playoffs, but there's a good crew on that front office. There's a good coaching staff, and I assure you that team is as talented as any in the league. I feel like good things are on the horizon for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Love it, Peter. Thank you so much.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
All right, special thanks to Peter Schrager for joining us. Now we're going to go into our Pick Six, the six players who made us take notice at the NFL Scouting Combine. As we move further and further into the draft process, we want to learn a little bit more about these guys. And I'm going to start with a player who Chip Kelly knows quite well already, tackle Jake Fisher. He had missed time during the season, but he was instrumental to the success overall of the offensive line. Moved from right tackle to left tackle this past year. Some question after the team struggled in his absence, including the one loss they had during the regular season, that maybe, you know, Fisher should be the Heisman candidate, not Marcus Mariota. Don't know if you want to go that crazy with it, but
I wouldn't go quite that crazy.
No, of course not. But knows the scheme and was outstanding in both the timing and position drills.
You know, I agree. I'm very, very high on Fisher.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the athleticism is exactly what you're looking for, especially in this offense. I don't know if he's going to be there for the Eagles in the second round.
Yeah,
at this point,
I think that's a fair statement.
Is he a first round pick? I mean, that's
the question.
I think he could be. To me,
he was your number three.
He was my number three tackle. Yeah, and you know, a guy that I don't think people expected him to have the number 140, the number 110, the number 1 3 cone, the number 1 short shuttle among the tackle guard prospects, and he was lights out.
Okay, who wants to go next?
No, that's all you. Finish your six.
You want me? I go all six. All right.
Round them out.
Wow, Fran.
Cracking the whip.
Seriously. I'll go with Louisiana State cornerback Jalen Collins. There was no question going into the process how athletic he would be. He showed that at the combine. You know, he was listed by LSU at a good size, good length. He checked in and it stood up. Now you just want to know, why did he not get on the field more when he was playing for the Tigers? That's really the big question. And again, that's a question that you had going into it, but at least you affirmed everything else about him so that now moving forward, you just have to figure out, why did he have only 10 starts, if I'm correct, during his time with the Tigers?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just not that good.
I know. I think he's very talented. I think it's a question of, you know, I think that there could be other issues involved.
Right.
So my third guy, Michigan State running back Jeremy Langford, back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, but he ran a 4.42. In the four-yard dash, so he showed he has the long speed, and I think the big question going into it is, you hear about, you know, Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon as the top running backs. Why is Langford, who was very productive in a big-time conference, who showed some good athleticism at the combine, not in the conversation? I'm not saying to be the top running back, but to be a guy who could be taken on that second day of the draft.
Yeah, and I would have had Langford in mine as well if you hadn't had him on yours, but we saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I remember thinking that he was very impressive. And it's hard to judge running backs, of course, in those practices because they're not going live. But he caught the ball very well. He looked very agile, cutting in those passing drills, getting open. And then to see him actually run and be that athletic, I think, says a lot. I think he's a very good player.
I think he's one of those guys where, you know, you can watch the guy play, you know, during the fall, and then you watch the combine and you could see some of the drills kind of match up to what you see. I don't know if I expected him to run 4.42, but you know, he had the best 10-yard split of any running back, and you could see watching him at Michigan State that he had some of those explosive traits, but I didn't know how athletic he was moving laterally, and so his shuttle, his three cone, they were on the below average side in terms of compared to the other running backs. So I think he's one of the guys where the numbers almost help to tell the story of what he is as a player.
All right, number four, I have Arizona State safety Demaryius Randall. He tested well athletically in the 40, the vertical, the three cone, and the 20-yard shuttle. The question with him is going to be size, 196 pounds. He's 5'11". Is that going to be too small? Or could the Eagles see him as a versatile chess piece who can play both in the box and out in coverage and cover both tight ends and receivers as well?
Yeah, and he was impressive at the Senior Bowl. Another guy that, you know, Bo talked about, Langford. I thought Randall going into the Senior Bowl week, I wasn't crazy about, but seeing him down in Mobile, I was very, very interested to see, you know, how he was covering wide receivers in space, how he was playing sideline to sideline. He's a guy that I'm looking forward to watching in the future more.
Next on my list, Georgia wide receiver Chris Conley, 6'2", 213 pounds, was outstanding in the 40-yard dash, also explosive in the broad and vertical jumps. Really came down to injuries is what limited his production, but he played in an offense where he had to block. And you've heard nothing but glowing reviews about him as a person on campus. So it seems like that maybe he's a guy who, you know, could kind of move up the ranks a little bit if he can stay healthy and frame. I know you were telling me about his backstory, and I had some really gruesome injuries to overcome there at Georgia. But, you know, if health-wise he checks out, well, maybe he's a prospect who will do much better in the pro game than he did in college.
Yeah, and he was a guy that when we got back this week, he was the first guy I wanted to watch. And you know who he reminded me of is, let's see if this name rings a bell, Joe Morgan from the Saints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's good for like one big play a year in the regular season and one big play a year in the preseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a bigger kid. On the, you know, he's like 6'1", but he had obviously all the explosive numbers in terms of his 40, his 10-yard, his in both jumps. Moving laterally again, he's not one. He's a little bit stiff in the lower half. So, you know, in terms of breaking down on those intermediate routes, he can improve a little bit there. But I think he was intriguing. I think he could, you know, sneak his way into the late rounds.
My last guy is outside linebacker Alani Fua from Brigham Young. Huge fan of the site Mock Draftable. Been checking out the spider graphs, you know, ever since we got back from Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
And outstanding. And one, you know, a couple of drills you look at with edge rushers or how they perform in the 20-yard shuttle and the three-cone drill was great in those. 6'5". He played, you know, multiple spots on the defense. Has experience in coverage. The question with him, to me, is he has shorter arms. Typically, the Eagles want guys with the longer arms. Had, I think, one of the shorter arms among all the outside linebacker prospects. But in terms of a guy who maybe in the later rounds who was productive, has done what the Eagles have done, or, you know, has done what the Eagles are looking to do, maybe he's a guy that they can take a flyer on.
And what I found was to be the most impressive with him was at 6'5", he had the best three cone of all the linebackers. And I actually have him grouped with the off line of scrimmage linebackers. So he ran the best of all those guys, which is very impressive.
All right.
I don't have much on Alani Fua, I gotta say.
All right. Well, that's a 6 for Chris.
I'll have to admit.
What do you got, Bo?
You want me to go?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All right. My first one, Justin Cox, the Mississippi State safety. 6'1", 191. A little slight, I guess, but ran 4.36. He also had the best broad jump among safeties. I'm not super familiar with him, so that made me take notice.
Yeah, I haven't watched him yet, but Mayock talked about him on the broadcast and talked about he's got athletic gifts, but there's some off-field stuff there that teams will have to check out. So I'm looking forward to watching him more.
No relation to Fletcher Cox. That was the first thing I was trying to research.
Right, a Mississippi State guy named Cox. Yeah.
Who was from the Yazoo River area as well.
No, is he too? Is he too? And they got Caleb Ewells, who is from Yazoo City.
That's right.
Who we talked to. And he was not at the combine, right?
He was not at the combine.
He was one of the snubs?
Yes.
All right. Next, Virginia Tech offensive lineman Lawrence Gibson. 6'6", 306, so he's a big guy, but he had the best vertical and the best broad jump among offensive linemen.
Yeah, I mean, that was
he's explosive.
Yeah, no question. That's a good one.
Have you seen him at all? No, I got nothing. I got nothing else on him. Okay.
That's now, why you want to learn more about him.
Well, this is what guys want to learn more about. The one guy, well, there's two guys who I'm already pretty familiar with, but one of them, and I'm going against what Peter Schrager said earlier, and that's Brett Hundley, because we didn't get to see him at the Senior Bowl, so you wanted to know, is he really that athletic? And he is pretty athletic. I mean, best 20-yard shuttle, third in the vertical among quarterbacks, ran a 4.63, which is not necessarily super great, but pretty good. On Mock Draftable, his number two comparison is Marcus Mariota.
Interesting.
So, you know, again, with quarterbacks, it's not necessarily about how athletic they are. You want to see what they do on the tape. I don't know what that was over there, but and I know that Fran has not fallen in love with Brett Hundley on the tape, but I was happy to see him be that athletic. And if that's what you're looking for in this offense, then maybe he's the guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked about it last week. Hundley's a guy, obviously, has all the tools that you want physically in terms of arm strength, in terms of athleticism and size, and he's got the high character. So if you think that he can work through some of those issues, if you know the offense perhaps didn't put him in the best position to succeed in at UCLA, maybe that he could be a higher pick. So I'll be interested to see what happens with Brett Hundley.
The one thing is he's not as much of a projection with the Eagles.
No,
he compared the Eagles offense,
and he's selling the Eagles too. Yes. You know, when he's asked what team he'd want to go to, he says the Eagles. So He's desperate to be here.
I think any offensive player would want to come here. I mean, I would think that if you asked any offensive skill position player what place they would want to go to, they would say Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, back to a guy I'd never heard of before. Montana defensive end Zach Wagenman, 6'3", 247, ran the best three cone for defensive lineman.
I haven't watched him yet.
Yeah, me neither.
There you go. Learn more.
I'm sure he's a try-hard guy. I'm sure he's a gym rat. All right. Mike Hull, who we watched a little bit before the Shrine game. Was the Shrine game, right?
No, he was a senior
he
bowl
was
guy.
Senior bowl guy? Yeah. Oh, well, I'm getting him confused, I guess. But the knock on Hull is that he wouldn't be athletic enough. And, you know, he had the second best bench press rep, so you know that he's a guy who works hard. But he also was he did well in the changing of direction drills. He was fourth in the shuttle, third in the 60-yard shuttle, fifth in the three cone. So he's at least got that. He doesn't have straight ahead speed, but he can change direction pretty well.
Yeah, and Hull's a guy that I was very impressed with, you know, and compared him to another former Penn State guy, Mike Mowdy. When we were down there in Mobile, Mowdy was a guy that I liked. I think Hull has some ability. I think he's definitely a draftable guy. I like what I saw from Hull.
Okay. And my last one, got to give it to him, Kevin Johnson from Wake Forest.
Of course.
Cornerback. He did very well. And he, too, you know, he was one of those guys who Phil Savage said, do your homework on him because he backed out of the Senior Bowl
right.
Late on in the process. But he's got the length. He's over 6 feet. He had the second-best 20-yard shuttle, third-best broad jump, ran a 4.52, fourth in the three cone. So he's got the athleticism you look for on the outside.
You can't trust those Demon Deacons.
You certainly can't.
No. Who was it that we were talking to that said they were talking about small school guys? Oh, that's right. So this is great. I don't want to get on too much of a rant, but we were talking to the multimedia department for the Carolina Panthers and how they travel around to different pro days. And he said, yeah, you know, we usually go to North Carolina and NC State, South Carolina. And I usually try to make it to one small school, you know, so we'll go to Appalachian State, you know, we'll go here. And, you know, sometimes we'll go to Wake Forest. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So our boy Mike from the Carolina Panthers, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Carolina Panthers are the small school of the NFL.
I thought you'd enjoy that. So anyway, back to my pick six. David Johnson, Northern Iowa. We saw him at the Senior Bowl. He caught the ball very well. That's what he did during his time down there. Was very, very good against top competition, and he tested very well. Pretty much in every one of the athletic tests, he was in the top five. So David Johnson was a guy that was very impressive to me. My second guy was Michael Pruitt from Southern Illinois. We saw him at the East-West Shrine game. He ran the best 40 of any tight end at a 4.58. Finished in the top five at the position in the 10-yard, the broad jump, vertical jump, and both agility drills. Showed off the athleticism that we saw down there in St. Pete and that we saw, you know, during his time with the Salukis.
And Wes Saxton was second, right?
That's right.
So Shrine game tight end showing up big.
Well represented. Number three, I'm going to go
better than the quarterbacks.
That's true. I'm going to go with an offensive lineman, Mark Lewinsky from West Virginia, who...
Isn't it Glowinski?
Mark Glowinsky. Yeah, that's what I said. Mark,
I think you were making the G silent. You were connecting. You said Mark Lewinsky.
I'm a little.
He's not related to Monica.
Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I'm a little congested, so excuse me. But he had the top broad jump of any offensive lineman. He finished with a top five three cone, top five short shuttle. So you can see the different athletic traits that he's got. He finished in the top five of the vertical jump. If you look at last year's numbers with offensive linemen, so I thought he did a really good job athletically. So Mark Lewinsky.
Hey, we interviewed him.
And
on
he was
the podcast,
great. Yeah, and he was a good interview. So then looking at the linebacker position, three guys that I went with. One was an edge rusher, and that's Eli Harold, who was another guy that we talked to. Was C-Mac's favorite interview.
Is it Eli Harold or Harold Eli?
It is Eli Harold. And he finished with a top 40 of all the edge rushers at 4.53, which was very impressive. And he finished with a top 10-yard split at 1.56. It's obviously very, very impressive for an edge guy. Finished with a top five in the agility drills as well. But he was an above-average jumper with, you know, when you look at the explosive drills. So Eli Harold is a guy that, watching him on tape, I wasn't – a lot of people are in love with his athleticism. I wasn't so crazy about it, but I think that I might have to go back and watch a little bit more because the combine was very, very impressive for him. Stephen Anthony, I thought, was one of the guys that people were very impressed with coming away from the week out of Clemson. He ran a 4.57, which was the best 40 for all the off-the-ball linebackers. Finished in the top five of the 10-yard split, both jumps and both agility drills. So athletically, Stephen Anthony is a guy that stood out at the Senior Bowl. We both liked when we saw him down there. The instincts are off the charts. So if he shows the athleticism, he could be one of the first linebackers taken, I think.
I can't think of anyone else who who raised their stock, so to say, as much combined in both the Senior Bowl and the Combine, coming out as one of the top risers from both.
I read an article after saying that when he first showed up to postseason training, he was running 4.7s, and now he's running the 4.5. So he's been working really, really hard to get that time up. So, you know, and take that for what you will. You know, right. That's one of the problems with the 40 is that it doesn't necessarily always measure that playing speed if you can, you know, immediately change it just like that. But, you know, for what it's worth, I thought Anthony had a very, very good combine. And then the last guy's a guy we saw down at the Shrine game. I had questions about his overall athleticism when I watched him at Kansas, but his instincts are off the charts, his toughness are off the charts, and he tested insanely well. Ben Heaney, who, you know, he had the top short shuttle of 4 seconds flat, which is very impressive. Had the top long shuttle for all the, you know, not everyone runs the long shuttle, so, you know, take that for what it is. But Ben Heaney was, you know, in the top five in the 40, top five in the three cone. You have to question his short arms, and that was in the bottom five. That was one of the questions I had about him going into the week. And then he was also in the bottom five in terms of his weight. So, you know, there are still some questions with him that I think will prevent him from being, you know, a top day or, you know, second day pick. But I think Ben Heaney's got some ability.
Mr. Heaney.
That's right.
So one player who did well athletically at the combine, there's really not a whole lot of questions about from that standpoint, is wide receiver Sammy Coates out of Auburn. The big thing with him is inconsistent hands, and didn't really do anything at the combine to dispel that notion. But he is the first of our two unofficial visits as Bo Wolf goes one-on-one with the former Auburn Tiger.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we are here with Sammy Coates, the Auburn wide receiver. And Sammy, for fans who have never seen you play, and I don't think there's many of them, but what is the scouting report on you as a player? What do you do well and what do you need to work on?
I'm a big playmaker. I like to go score touchdowns from 40 to 60 yards out. I like to get the ball and be physical. I'm very fast, so I just bring a different presence to the game.
What is, as a deep threat, what is the hardest part of making those plays downfield? Is it getting the separation or is it hauling the catch in at the catch point?
Just the concentration when the ball's in the air. You know, that ball's in the air for a while. It's about tracking it down. It's about making the catch while you're on the run and your head's shaking, everything moving. It's a lot of concentration, and it's all about the focus and the focus level you have. And the separation will come if you're fast. You always get a good separation, but if you're going against a good guy, you gotta get the separation. You gotta be physical. You gotta win the better at the end.
What do the scouts say or the people say that you need to do a little better?
You know, I just need to showcase that I can run routes and I can catch the ball with my hands. You know, that's my biggest emphasis week, and I've been doing a great job so far, I think.
And you're a big enough guy that you're not just some small little fast guy. You can win in the intermediate routes as well.
Yes, sir. I can. I've been showcasing that I can win across the middle of the field, run slants, run curls, run stop routes, but 10 yards, comebacks, and I've been running digs. I've been looking good this week so far to showcase that.
When you were growing up as a kid, were you always the big playmaker? Were you always the biggest and the fastest?
I wasn't always the biggest and fastest. I was a guy that played baseball growing up. I played baseball more than I played football. But then
you're speaking my language. I'm a baseball guy. So yeah. What position did you play growing up?
I played pitcher and I played outfield. My senior year in high school, I was throwing 95 off the mound.
Were you?
Yeah.
I'm jealous now.
I batted 500 and some. I had 10 home runs leading off and 27 stolen bases.
So why'd you play football?
Football is more fun. You know, it's just a different sport when you're out there on that field. It's a different atmosphere, and I enjoy playing the game of football.
So in high school, you were doing those two?
I played basketball, too.
Okay, basketball, too, I'm sure. And we're scoring, 20 points a game, something like
I played the center, so I was like an undersized center.
Okay.
I could jump real high, so I used to be selling tickets by dunking and stuff, so it was pretty
okay.
fun.
Okay. And then, as a baseball guy, were you drafted or anything like that, or did you think about playing?
They asked me, did I want to get in the draft? I turned it down. It was going to be late rounds, and I didn't want to go through.
Because you knew you wanted to be a football guy.
Yeah.
So tell us take us through the experience of playing big-time college football at Auburn in the SEC in front of all those thousands of fans.
Playing at Auburn University really is one of the most amazing things you can do. You know, it's a great school. The atmosphere is amazing. You know, the fans are always supportive. The town itself is amazing. You know, you got a bunch of great people that's always got your back. No, it's not a bad place to go. You know, you don't get in a lot of trouble there. It's a safe environment. And just it helped me be the man I am today. And if it wasn't for Auburn, I don't think I'd be sitting here today.
And, you know, there's only three juniors here at the Senior Bowl. You have to have graduated to be able to play here. So you already graduated. What was that? What was that about?
Oh, man, that was really big for me. I graduated December 13th. It was an amazing thing to get my degree, to finish strong, and to still be able to chase my dream. So I'm really thankful that I got a chance to graduate. And that was truly a blessing for me.
As you go through this draft process, all kinds of scouts and NFL draft people are going to be saying, you compare to this guy or this guy in the NFL. They're going to be saying who you remind them of. Who do you think that you're like in terms of NFL receivers?
I feel like I remind myself of Julio Jones, you know, just being a big physical, fast guy. He brings a different plays. He can make big plays on the field. And, you know, he's from right here, so.
That's true.
Yeah, so.
There's sort of like a... sort of a manliness about when it's a jump ball and it's you versus one other guy. Who's going to come down with it? Do you feel like a pride when it's a man on man thing?
I think it's just a wide receiver thing. You know, you see that ball and you want to prove a point. You want to prove a point that you're a big. You know how most people think defensive guys are the most mad on the field. And stuff.
Right.
When you're on offense, you see that ball and that's your mentality you take. I'm the manliest person out here. I'm a big bad man out here.
Right.
And that's the point you want to prove in that ball. Now you want to go snatch it and make them look bad when you catch it.
Yeah, all these wide receivers have all the swag, right?
Yeah, you got to make them have the swag.
So did you always have a swag growing up, or was there a time when you realized, okay, you know what, I am the man?
Nah, I never had that mentality. I never wanted to consider myself as being a man. You know, I was the type of guy that I just wanted to make plays. I just wanted to play football. So I never had, like, on the man mentality. I just had the mentality that I love this game, so I'm going to play and give it my best.
All right, last question, Sammy. Any hopes for when you want to come off the board come May?
I'm hoping first round, and I'm working hard to be a first round pick to showcase that I really am an all around player this week. I hope that can help, and I hope my combine scores can help too.
All right, one more since we ask everybody, who's the best player you played this season?
Collins from LSU.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Sammy Coates, best of luck, and maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia one day.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
On the clock.
All right, fellas, we're doing something a little different for On the Clock today.
This is scary.
You should be scared.
I have
what's
coming.
This is what he's been doing all week. See, he couldn't do the games all while we were in Indy, so he's like, scheming.
This is me proving a point. That's what this is.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
So no, this is double dangerous.
Let's talk a little bit about Gene Siffrin, Fran.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
The tight end from UMass. How old is he?
He's going to be 27.
No.
He's going to be 28.
He's going to be
28. He's 27 now. Okay.
How many players since 2000 do you think have been drafted over the age of 25?
12.
I think it's lower. I'll go 10.
It's actually 17.
Okay. I was going to say like 15.
Okay.
So that's good. Okay.
A little over 1 year. Okay.
Of those 17 players, how many have a Pro Bowl appearance?
Two.
None.
None is correct.
There you go.
Of those 17 players, how many have started more than 20 games? 20 or more games?
Five.
I'll go three.
Five is actually exactly correct.
Thank you.
How many?
How come I didn't get the ding for it?
Of those 17 players, how many would you consider subjectively, average NFL players?
Well, that's tough to say without knowing
who
they are.
Spectrum.
I don't know. So I'm going off your subjective, which is not subjective bias.
My bar for average is very low here.
Okay. So of the 17, 11.
Seven.
Three. Two of the guys who started at least 20 games are Chris Winkie and Brandon Whedon. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So the only three are Mike Anderson, the former Broncos running back, who was drafted at 26 years old in 2000.
What was his story? He was military?
Yeah, I believe he was military.
So these are guys that were 25 or older?
Yes.
Older than 25.
Older than 25.
It's over. It's over 25. Okay.
Yes, so that goes by how old they are during the NFL season, the next NFL season.
Okay.
So they could have been 25 when they were drafted.
Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
Danny Watkins is on the list. Yep. Say no more. The only three. Okay, so Mike Anderson, Sione Puha, Jets defensive lineman.
Sure, yeah.
In 2005 was 26. And Nick Kazier, the former offensive lineman for a few teams, including the Patriots. 2005, he was also 26. Now we're going a little differently here.
All right.
How many players since 2000 were 25 years or older and drafted in the first three rounds.
25 years or older.
And drafted in the first three rounds.
In the first three rounds.
I'll say four or five.
I'll say three. Four or five, which is it?
Four.
I'll say 20, three.
So this is including 25-year-olds.
Oh, that's true. Okay, so
the bar has is lowered.
I mean, I'm going to be wrong either way, so I'll double it, six.
19.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many of those are, in my opinion, adequate NFL players at best?
Of the 19?
These are first three-round picks.
Seven.
11.
Seven is correct, and the bar is pretty low. How many of them are good NFL players, turned out to be good NFL players?
One.
David Akers, two.
It's two or three. Depending on how you feel about depending on how you feel about Kevin Curtis.
Okay.
So it was good.
There are two.
He had a streak.
Yeah,
obviously.
But I mean, he was good for what, 2 years?
Yeah.
There are two, and that's exactly the problem with drafting an old guy. You're gonna get him in the peak of his athleticism for 2 years. That's it.
So everyone knows now how passionate.
There are two good players on this list.
If you look at Bo's ISO shot right now, you can see the fire in his eyes as he talks about this. He's very passionate.
There are two good players.
Brow is furling, the whole nine.
Sebastian Vollmer, who was a second round pick and was 25 years old.
He's turning into a pretty good player.
There's two good players. Okay. He's a good player. And Terrence Newman, who was a first round pick at 25 years old.
Wow.
In 2003. Can you believe he's still playing? 172 starts. He is the exception to the rule.
And the only thing
Puha,
at the factor.
Darren College is okay. Rob Morris is okay. You know who's not okay?
I would put College as a good player on there, but
he's okay. Yeah, I mean he's on.
I mean,
the
he's
list.
Played
I
for
counted.
A while.
I counted him in the seven.
Yeah.
So I mean this list is just littered with trash. I mean, literally littered. Who else is on it? Pariah Jerry, not a good player. Dusty
he was
Dvorak.
Wait, Pariah Jerry was.
He was 25 years old.
That's right.
Keith McGill. I guess the jury's out. He was a fourth round pick. Junior Siavi, six starts. Vernon Morrissey, good pick.
Oh, I forgot about him.
Is that a band name?
Yeah. James Jackson was a third round pick. He was a really good player.
The thing with
the
Siffrin.
Idea is that Siffrin is going to be 28 years old. He doesn't have a long career of playing football, so it's not like he's going to step in right away and know how to be in an NFL offense. By the time he knows what to do on the field, he's going to be ready for retirement. He's going to be 30 years old.
So this
not going to be athletic.
This stems from a conversation that Bo and I had before we left for the combine. I was catching up on Siffrin because I hadn't watched him yet. And I said, wow, he made a couple really great one-handed catches down in the red zone. I think it was against Bowling Green I was watching.
Yeah, great. A 27-year-old going up against Bowling Green.
I was just
going
to say, that was my whole point was going to be.
Awesome.
That's like me playing one-on-one basketball with my 7-year-old and my 5-year-old and dominating.
It's not
like
the same.
Yes, it is.
You're a 12-year-old playing against 8-year-olds in basketball.
Your
who's going to win?
It's not the same. It's not 100%
you're right.
The same.
He's probably more than 4 years older. He's 6 years older.
So now you can see how this conversation really, really irked Bo. I wasn't saying that he's a first-round pick. I'm just saying he catches the ball well. That's all.
Would you draft him?
You know who else catches the ball
well?
That's
what I'm
saying.
You
know who else catches the ball well and has good size? Harold Carmichael.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
You okay?
I'm
just looking. Do you need a water or anything?
Colt Brennan.
Well, yeah, but Colt Brennan wasn't a good player.
Well,
that's the thing is that some of these guys are just not good players.
Of course, and that's fair. And a lot of these guys are sixth and seventh round picks. You don't have high expectations for those guys anyway. But for the most part, I mean, there's no question that the track record of success is lower than it is for just draft picks in general.
Now, would you be more willing to take a chance on a quarterback who you
no.
would think that would be longer?
Absolutely not.
You know, and obviously after Brandon Whedon, I know you're going to be in that camp.
Absolutely not. I mean, a 25-year-old quarterback, maybe. Ryan Tannehill was 25 years old. But no, because I say this all the time. This is the Brandon Whedon thing. When he was coming out, remember when Trent Edwards had that awesome preseason? He was younger than Brandon Whedon. Could you imagine if Trent Edwards at that time in his career got to go play college football? He would have won a Heisman. His team would have gone undefeated. If he was playing at Temple, they would have gone undefeated.
Probable.
Well, they would have had a lot of talent.
I mean, I would say that, look, the big thing that goes into it is by the time a guy gets to his second contract and he's 25 years, let's say you draft him and he's 25, by the time he gets to his second contract, he's 29 or 30, you're not going to get great value there. So that's what, I mean, that's a very, very valid point.
Remember when the Dolphins took John Beck in the second round?
Yeah. How old was Beck at the time?
26.
He was 26.
Made 7 starts.
The thing I guess you could think about with the whole second contract thing is how quickly can you turn over the roster? Is it a thing where it's like college where you just say, all right, well, you know you're going to have him for 4 years. You got to make sure you have someone ready to go anyway by the end of it.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason I would say maybe at certain positions, quarterback, offensive line, a guy might last longer, could play into his 30s, but
it's just such a waste of resources. Theoretically, offensive line would be a position where it might make sense, and Vollmer is an exception. Darren College is an exception. But, and we saw with Danny Watkins, it's a position where you're grading guys on how strong they are, how able they are to move guys, and if you're 4 or 5 years older than the guys you're going up against, you should be stronger than them.
That's not necessarily the case, though. That's false.
What's false?
If a guy's 28 years old in the NFL and he's going up against a 22-year-old rookie, that's not the case. The guy that's 28 is automatically going to be stronger.
No, but when at that a college kid, your body is still developing.
Yes.
So in theory, Danny Watkins is going up against 20-year-olds, he should be able to move them around.
Listen, like I said, I just don't think it's as black and white as that.
It's like anything, there are going to be exceptions. But I don't know why you would choose to be fighting uphill. Why you would actively choose to pick a player who the odds are immediately reduced for of success.
I agree with that. All right, is Bo calm down? Because no. I have something a little special to end the segment.
Oh boy,
is he okay? Do we need to get him a glass of water or
Anthony
anything?
Anthony Schlegel, 3rd-round pick, 5 starts.
All right, well, look, we're just going to wrap up the segment this way.
Junior Siavi, 6 starts.
Went back to the archives. About, let's see here. What was the date? The date was, I believe it was January 12th. It was our second day at the Shrine game. BT, you want to roll it?
Who will run the fastest 40-yard jash? From the Senior Bowl.
This is the Senior Bowl once. This is the 22nd.
Will it be Jamison Crowder from Duke, wide receiver? Will it be Ohio State wide receiver Devin Smith? Will it be Miami wide receiver Philip Dorsett? Or will it be other?
It's going to be Smith or Dorsett. And if I had to guess, I'm going to go with Philip Dorsett.
I'm going with Dorsett, too. Yeah. He's got a track background.
He's got the track background. I think that, Devin Smith is going to run in the 4.3s as well. But I think Dorsett, you saw from day one, we were out there at Fairhope on Tuesday afternoon, and you could see from day one the juice he's got in his legs. You see the explosiveness, the acceleration in the open field. That guy, I think he's going to run probably he'll be one of the fastest guys at the combine for sure.
There's one other player who I think might be in the mix here because he does have that track background, and that is Donatello Luckett.
From
he was
right.
bad.
Okay, so from Harding, but a guy we haven't really talked about this week. He's been a little bit quiet, but really intriguing size. He's got that.
That's good,
that
BT.
It's bizarre to me that you chose this clip of all clips because first of all, like you found one where you were close
to
that.
No, that wasn't that line. It wasn't that. I wanted to look back because we did two over unders. And we did one for the Shrine, and we'll play that in a sec, and we did one for the Senior Bowl. So okay. I wanted to be able to look back at the two over-unders.
We were wrong. It was other. It was J.J. Nelson.
Well, yeah, but that one was about the Senior Bowl guys. No, that was about Senior Bowl guys.
You're right. It was about Senior Bowl guys, yeah.
All right, so let's hear the one for the Shrine.
Devin Smith was disappointing his 40 times.
He ran in the low 4.4s. Yeah, he ran in the low 4.4s. And I think
it was
his start. I mean, he had a slower 10-yard split than a couple of the other guys, even that ran a little bit slower than him. So, yeah, it is what it is. All right, let's
see
the other
one. This is good.
All right, go ahead.
All right, our next over-under. Players currently here at the Shrine game who will go to the combine and run a sub-4.42 40-yard dash. Oof. Over-under 1.5.
Sub-4.42.
Yes.
I'm going to go under. I don't know if there's any kind of any guys like that.
I don't see any guys with that big speed here.
Last year we had John Brown here. Yeah, last year John Brown was here, and you could see even though he was on the smaller end, and I don't think any of us thought that he was going to be a mid-third round pick and come and have the kind of season that he had. But you knew that, look, this kid's got some juice in his legs. I don't know that there's any kind of juice in from that respect. Look, I think that Trey McBride can run 4.48, maybe the low 4.5s, and he's a vertical threat. I think Deion Long is probably in the same, you know, in the same realm.
And maybe I should have made that on over under 1.5 instead of 1.5, but oh well.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the under.
So McBride ran a 4.42.
McBride ran a 4.4. He ran a 4.41, and Deion Long ran a 4.51.
Okay.
The other guys from the Shrine, Darren Waller, ran a 4.46, which that's 6.6. At 6.6, 240, pretty much.
Right.
Unbelievable. Damian Swan ran a 4.51. Josh Shaw ran a 4.44. Craig Mager, 4.44. Justin Coleman, 4.5.
Yeah.
So we did pretty well.
If we'd done 4.45, then, but yeah, so we were right. We both took the under.
We took McBride. Yeah, we took the under, and we thought McBride would be the best.
Mager, that was an impressive 40 for him, I thought.
Yes, it was. And then looking at the Senior Bowl guys, we didn't touch on that in the last one, but Dorsett was the 4.33, Smith 4.42, Crowder was 4.56, which was disappointing, and then Luckett 4.65.
I told you about Crowder.
You told me.
Totally because he's a Duke guy.
Some of the other big ones.
No, that's not true.
No?
No. I like Lakin Tomlinson.
Well, Crowder had the worst 10-yard split of any wide receiver at the combine.
I don't think he's that good.
At 1.71. I mean, there were like, when you talked about Eli Harrell at 4.53. Yeah. Like, that, you know, that's pretty bad. So, yeah, those are, I figured.
Oh, that was good.
Take a look back.
I like that. Not Donatello Luckett, but Tyler Lockett was impressive.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Tyler Lockett at 4. Yeah, I think he ran a 4.4 flat. That was impressive.
Yeah.
All right.
No, that was good. That was a good look back.
That Thank was you. Nice. Very nice of Dunn. Yeah. So nothing with Donovan Smith.
I look forward to more of those. Yeah, nothing with Donovan Smith, although I guess he's an offensive lineman, and he's not old because he got to go as a junior. But.
That's right.
So I was wondering if you're going to work in one of the stats there.
No.
About Donovan
but
Smith,
Donovan so. Smith is not an old offensive lineman, and so that means he has a chance to succeed at the next level, and we talk to him at the Senior Bowl.
The unofficial visit.
All right, we're here with Penn State offensive lineman Donovan Smith. And Donovan, tell us what the scouting report is on you as a player.
Oh, man. I'm not sure. You know, I try not to get too involved in that. You know, I definitely ask the coaches around here, you know, some things I can work on. But, you know, I try not to get too involved in that. So,
when you think about your favorite plays, is it run blocking or pass blocking?
A little bit of both. More so pass blocking. You know, you can really show your athleticism a little bit more. But run blocking, you know, you definitely can mix it up and impose your will. So, you know, a little bit of both.
For the Eagles, I guess we're always looking for that versatility, that athleticism mm-hmm. along the offensive line. You feel like you have that? You can sort of get to the second level?
Oh, yeah, yes, sir. I love getting to the second level and moving out in space. You know, a lot of people look at my size and don't think I can move, but, you know, I can move, so.
Tackle, guard, you feel comfortable at both?
Yeah, I'll play a little bit of both. It doesn't matter to me, you know, anywhere I can help out a team, you know, and get on the field and contribute, you know, I'll play tackle or guard.
How about the decision to enter the draft for you? I know because you've graduated, you get to be here at the Senior Bowl, but why enter the draft?
You know, I sat down with my family. You know, I graduated in 3.5 years, and that was one of my priorities, you know, one of my goals. So, you know, after I accomplished that, you know, I sat down with my family, and I just felt it was time. You know, my body was fresh. I didn't want to risk any more injuries. And, you know, I wanted to take that leap and, you know, tackle my next goal, which was becoming an NFL player.
Do you have any expectations for the draft come May where you hope to come off the board?
Oh, man. I mean, I'll be blessed to get drafted. You know, I'm like I said, I'm not getting too involved in numbers or anything. I'm just going to, you know, let my play speak for itself and, you know, God will take care of that.
Are there any linemen in the league who you sort of look up to or think you have a similar game to maybe?
Oh, man. I can tell you my favorite lineman that I look at.
Who's that?
I was a big Jonathan Ogden guy, the Brickishaw Ferguson, and Joe Thomas.
Okay, that's pretty good. And finally, like we like to ask everybody, who's the best player you played this season?
Joey Bosa.
Okay, all right.
Ohio State.
All right, well, Donovan, best of luck, and maybe we'll see you in Philadelphia.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, it's time for the final segment in this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. We're going to do our little mailbag, and on Twitter we solicited some questions using the hashtag EaglesDraft, and we got three here to kind of just, you know, wrap up the post-combine edition of the podcast. First one comes from @DZ86, wants to know, and I think the answer is a resounding no, but
Could Kevin White slip to number 20? I think we're all in agreement there. Not going to happen.
Yeah, he breaks his leg or something.
I think you put that one to bed.
The only and to add fuel to the fire. Mm-hmm. To add fuel to the fire on that one, there was a report. I think it was the Lance Zierlein column on NFL.com that he interviewed well. On top of it, so factor all that together.
I thought there was a report he didn't interview well. Maybe I'm
Zierlein. He was one of the better interviews.
Yeah.
At the combine. All right, so forget him. Now, how about Jalen Collins or Eric Rowe being available in the second round?
Collins,
it depends. I mean, it depends on who you believe. I think the group think in terms of the media circle thinks that Jalen Collins is going to be a first round
Correct.
Pick.
Not sure I agree with that.
I don't know that I agree with it personally.
Yeah.
I think Rowe is better than Collins personally, but you know, I think both are good players and would be good fits.
I think that Jalen Collins is gonna not be a first round pick. That's my guess.
Okay.
If I had to guess,
I'll go on the record with that.
If I had to guess, I would agree.
Well, yeah, that's a spreadsheet as well. Some of these a little.
That's right.
Yeah, we should make some bold predictions.
Yeah.
Some hot takes.
Bold hot takes. The next one comes from I Bleed Green 24/7. Is Denzel
call a doctor?
Is Denzel Perryman a good fit as an inside linebacker in the Eagles 3-4 scheme, and can he be a three-down linebacker? So my take would be, yes, I would project him to be inside linebacker in a 3-4. Not sure if he's a three-down backer, because if I'm correct, Fran, he wasn't even used that way in Miami.
He came off the field a little bit on sub-packages, but, I mean, for the most part, he can handle everything. It really just depends on what you're looking for to pair next to Michael Kendricks. I mean, if you want another guy like Michael, then he's not necessarily that guy. I think he's closer to a D'Amico Ryans in terms of his body type and the way that he plays. So that would be the big thing that you're going to ask when you're talking about Denzel Perryman.
And that's an interesting question, and I don't know what necessarily Chip Kelly wants.
Yep.
Does he want two Michael Kendrickses, or does he want more of a thumper?
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
No.
So he hasn't had to bring in an inside linebacker since he's been here. So
that's right.
I think we'll find out.
I'm trying to think.
I mean, Jason Phillips, but he was a special teams. Teams
right.
Well, Najee Good.
Najee Good was special teams.
Yeah.
But
it was a waivers guy.
That was a waivers guy. I mean, he hasn't had to really draft or sign a premium free agent.
True. Right. Very true. The last one comes from at Gov27, wants to know, how soon could the Eagles address the receiver position? Could it be within the first three rounds? And I certainly think that
could be, sure.
I think it's possible.
With the strong crop once again, yes. I certainly can envision you get there to number 20 or their second or third round picks. And yes, the best player could very well be a wide receiver. And at this point, I don't see why they wouldn't take advantage of that to bolster an already good young core. Obviously, the big question is, will Jeremy Maclin be back? Will he re-sign? But if you put him into the mix, you say, all right, you know, you got Jordan Matthews coming back for a second season. You got Josh Huff, you know, coming off, you know, some, you know, up and down rookie season.
But, I like Josh Huff.
But we all, I think, are in agreement that, yes, we think that he'll be a good player.
And that's about it.
You know?
And the other thing that, obviously, Jeremy Maclin is going to be a free agent, but Brad Smith's going to be a free agent too. So there's going to be a spot, you know, in that top five that will be available. So
Mail's technically a free agent, and he's an exclusive right, so pretty much it would be the Eagles can offer a minimum deal, and he has to take it or leave it. So
What is the combine drill that Jeff Mail owned?
Was it the three-cone?
He owned a bunch.
Was it the three-cone?
I thought he owned a bunch of them.
There's one that he's got, like, the best score since
I need the infographic.
The last 2 years or something like that.
Where's Lorraine? Our phenomenal designer who did the great infographic, who highlighted all the great combine performances. So, fellas? Mm-hmm.
Like
good to be back.
Yes. Great
back
to have
in
you
saddle.
Back. Yes, indeed. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. I believe Tuesday we're going to aim to film our next show.
Tuesday, yeah. Back on schedule next week with the combine and the rearview mirror.
So look for the next podcast to be coming right after weekend next Tuesday. Tuesday or Wednesday, would you say? It actually will go.
Audio will go up Tuesday night. Video Wednesday morning.
There you have it. So for Bo Wolf and Fran Duffy and our producer Brian Thomas, I'm Chris McPherson. Thanks for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Friends, don't let your friends draft old players.